Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman, and Walker. A Florida law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman, and Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. And from Florida State University, a preeminent institution. FSU license plates support scholarships for deserving students who enrich and contribute to our community, the state, and nation. More at fsu.edu/mytag. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
State lawmakers are trying to limit certain abortions for women in their second trimester. Judges have struck down similar laws in other states, and critics say Florida courts would do the same.
Members, this is not going to result in changing existing practices because we have an independent judiciary.
Also tonight, the Florida Supreme Court considers the state's hazing law. We'll find out what happened during today's opening arguments.
Florida's hazing statute is being argued at the Florida Supreme Court, and there are more of these cases in the pipeline.
We'll also get an update on a legislative plan to strip Confederate holidays from Florida's official calendar and meet two former Florida congressmen who should be political enemies but have joined forces to heal the nation's partisan wounds. It's the midpoint in the legislative session. I'm Tom Flanagan. This is Capitol Report. Florida lawmakers want to restrict an abortion procedure that's typically done in the second trimester. Judges in other states have struck down similar laws as unconstitutional. But Kate Payne reports legal concerns are not slowing the bill down. And a note to our listeners, this story may be distressing to some.
The vast majority of women who have abortions do it early on, in the first trimester. About 10% wait until the second trimester, after 13 weeks or so. For many, that's because certain developmental issues can't be detected until 20 weeks. Others wait because the procedures are expensive and can require days of travel. Now state lawmakers want to limit the second trimester abortion procedure that many women rely on.
Dilation and evacuation is the most commonly performed second trimester abortion procedure, accounting for approximately 96% of all second trimester abortions.
That's Republican Representative Aaron Grawl of Vero Beach. The reason D&E abortions are the most common is because it's the safest option women have. But Grawl believes the procedure itself is inhumane. Doctors start by dilating the cervix and then removing the fetus with suction or with forceps. Just a heads up, the following description of the procedure is pretty graphic.
When forceps are used, the physician grips the fetus and pulls until a portion of the fetus breaks free. This could be a leg, an arm, or another body part. The physician continues removing the fetus piece by piece.
Grawl wants to make sure the fetuses aren't alive when this happens. Her bill would require doctors to stop their hearts with an injection. There are some exceptions for women whose life is at risk, but otherwise doctors could face criminal charges.
Any person who willfully performs or actively participates in a termination of pregnancy in violation of the requirements of this section or 390.01112 commits a felony of the third degree.
Lawmakers were visibly uncomfortable listening to Grawl's descriptions, and retired obstetrician Etheline Jones says her characterizations are fair. But Jones says a detailed description of any surgery can be shocking. She stands by the process and says she's seen the alternative.
I have witnessed firsthand the desperation of women who terminate their pregnancies when abortion was illegal. I've seen the deaths that have occurred. I've seen the mutilations that have occurred. I've seen the children left behind because their mother died in an attempt.
The American Congress of Obstetricians and Gynecologists says E&D abortions are the safest option women have in the second trimester. But Jones argues the bill would change this procedure. She says the injections to stop the heart could lead to complications.
First, that the pregnancy continues. Second, that there are complications as far as the mother in the course of attempting the injection. inject it directly into the heart of the fetus and you kill the fetus. Pick it up into the maternal circulation in a woman who already has some existing heart compromise can be dangerous.
For Jones, the health and safety of the woman is the end-all be-all. But Democratic lawmakers are worried about constitutionality, too. Judges have blocked similar laws in six other states. Dania Beach Democratic Representative Joe Geller says the same thing would happen in Florida.
Members, this is not going to result in changing existing practices because we have an independent judiciary.
Republican lawmakers call this a moral issue, comparing the process to an execution and calling abortion doctors monsters. They say pouring tax dollars into a legal fight would be money well spent. If the bill makes it that far, the American Civil Liberties Union would likely challenge it.
The ACLU will definitely explore all legal options if this bill were to pass.
That's ACLU lawyer Kara Gross. The measure has one more committee stop in the House, but Senate lawmakers still haven't taken up the companion bill. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Kate Payne.
Lynn Hatter joins us on Capitol Report, fresh from the Florida Supreme Court, where there is a lot of dispute going on involving an incident that goes way back to 2011, Lynn Hatter, a hazing death in Central Florida involving a member of the Florida A&M University Marching 100. It was a very, very huge deal at the time and continues so in the judicial proceedings you attended today.
Yeah, Tom. So the defense attorneys for Dante Martin are appealing his conviction of hazing and manslaughter. And they're appealing it on the basis that Florida's hazing statute is vague. And so today the Florida Supreme Court heard oral arguments on that case.
What was the outcome of the oral arguments? Give us the 30,000-foot overview of what happened.
The justices did not appear to be buying sort of what the defense was laying out. Martin's defense attorneys were arguing again that the statute was vague, and it really centered on sort of two things in the statute. So it centered on the definition of a contest and a competition. And Martin's attorneys were trying to argue that the process that ended up in Robert Champion's death was a competition that he agreed to participate in. And they tried to argue that that competition was not hazing. That did not fly over very well with the justices. In fact, you heard a large amount of skepticism. At one point, Justice Peggy Quince could be overheard saying that it was ridiculous. Martin's attorneys also tried to argue that what he went through, the process called crossing bus C, was also akin to MMA or boxing. That also did not fly over very well. And in fact, the justices really pushed back hard on that.
So where does the case go from this point now that we have the initial arguments out of the way?
We're just waiting to see what the justices are going to say. It's hard to see this going in Martin's favor. He was the sole person convicted of hazing. There were 13 people charged. Most of them accepted plea deals that resulted in community service. Martin has a hazing conviction right now, and he was also charged with manslaughter, and he's currently serving a 6.5-year prison sentence. It is very hard to see this going in his favor, given sort of the widespread skepticism expressed by the justices today.
These things can sometimes take months before any kind of a ruling comes out of the court.
Yes, they can. There were several, the justices heard several cases today, some dealing with red light cameras, others dealing with more mundane issues. And so it's probably going to be a while, maybe a month or two before they issue a ruling on this. But, you know, this issue of hazing right now, we're also looking at another case that may soon be tried under Florida's hazing statute. And that is the case involving Florida State University and the case of Andrew Coffey, who was the fraternity pledge who has died back in November. There have been 9 people charged in his case. So the fact that the Florida's hazing statute is being argued at the Florida Supreme Court and there are more of these cases in the pipeline, I think this is something that a lot of people are going to be watching and looking at what happens here.
Certainly not a single case ramification. We'll just have to wait and see what happens. But thank you for keeping track of it today at the Florida Supreme Court. Florida Public Radio's Lynn Hatter. Thanks, Lynn.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you. Still to come on Capitol Report, lawmakers are pushing for uniform rules for bike-sharing companies. But some question why, when there's a patchwork for so many other situations, from tree trimming to parking tickets.
If I park outside in Tallahassee and I get a ticket, it's like $25 or something. It's some low number, right? Because it's Tallahassee.
And two former Florida members of Congress, each from different political parties, want to help heal America's great partisan divide.
Quickly in Washington, you realize just how divided the Congress is.
Support for Capitol Report is provided by the Able Trust, dedicated to connecting businesses and workers with disabilities. Businesses are encouraged to recruit, interview, and hire talented and loyal Floridians with disabilities as they seek to broaden their customer base and reach all of Florida's diverse population. Abletrust.org.
As more and more bike-sharing companies pop up around Florida, Regan McCarthy reports the state's lawmakers are looking into how best to regulate the businesses.
Tampa Republican Senator Dana Young says businesses need consistent rules, not a patchwork made up on a city-by-city basis.
I think uniformity statewide is the gist of this, and that's why we're doing the bill, is that there is so much differentiation around the state and in many areas like Pinellas County where you can barely walk 5 feet without walking into another city. It becomes complicated for these companies doing business there.
Young has a bill she says will create that uniformity for so-called bike sharing companies.
Bike shares, if some of you don't have them in your communities, are sort of a newfangled bike rental company where some use docking stations like permanent bike racks. Some simply have computerized app-based rental things, and they can be on any bike rack. And they provide bicycles for anyone in the community who might want to use one. It's growing all over the United States. It's particularly growing in urban areas of Florida. And this bill seeks to create a uniform way of dealing with these bike-sharing businesses throughout our state.
Young's legislation says once a municipality has opened itself to bike-sharing businesses, it cannot prevent more of that type of company from opening.
You can't have one come in and keep Judy's Bike Shop out. You gotta treat these businesses like you would treat any other restaurant or any other type of business in your community. The goal is to make sure that there is no preferential treatment, although cities and counties can always make decisions on what happens on their public property, and we don't change that. So if they want to let a docking bike station be on a city in a city park, they can do that, and they don't have to provide that to everyone.
Young's bill also creates a uniform system for dealing with bikes that may be abandoned.
It allows local governments the authority to move a bike if it is unlawfully parked to obstruct or endanger the public. So they can legally move it, you know, the park ranger or whoever can just move it off the sidewalk, get it out of the way so that our Floridians and visitors who need accessibility can have it. We impose a fine. We impose a $10 per bicycle per day penalty if these companies get notice from the local government that their bike is illegally parked and they don't move it in 24 hours, they get a $10 fine.
But Miami Gardens Democratic Senator Oscar Brannon says more local input might be needed for issues like selecting an appropriate fine.
Because, like, I give you an example. If I park outside in Tallahassee and I get a ticket, it's like $25 or something. It's some low number, right? Because it's Tallahassee. If I park on South Beach and I don't pay the thing, it's like an $80 fine because it's South Beach. So, and I expect that because it's different, you know, it's a different level of a different type of place. So while I think a fine is appropriate, why not just allow it like we allow like tickets, like they get to determine what the fine is.
Young says she's working to walk a fine line between making room for new kinds of businesses and maintaining local control. She's also working closely with stakeholders and keeping her door open for more suggestions. Young's bill passed its first committee stop in the Senate this week. A similar bill has also passed its first committee in the House. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
Will a descendant of a Confederate soldier be willing to agenda a controversial bill that's next heading to his Florida Senate committee? As Sasha Cordner reports, the measure would get rid of certain holidays on the Florida books, which includes Confederate Memorial Day.
When it comes to observed holidays, some of the more well-known ones include New Year's Day, Thanksgiving Day, and Veterans Day. Even Martin Luther King Jr. Day just passed last month. 4 days after that is the birthday of Robert E. Lee, who served as the commander of the Confederate States Army during the Civil War. Since 1895, his birthday has been considered a legal Florida holiday along with Confederate Memorial Day. 10 years later, the birthday of Jefferson Davis, a president of the Confederate States, also became a legal holiday. Now, more than a century later, Plantation Democratic Senator Lauren Book wants to remove them as state holidays.
This bill would repeal the legal holidays in Florida for Confederate Memorial Day and the birthdays of Robert E. Lee and Jefferson Davis.
And Book says the goal behind her bill is simple.
I've been a Floridian my entire life, born and raised, and I love, appreciate, and honor our state's unique heritage and culture. From the melting pot that is South Florida to North Florida's warm southern charm, our diversity is part of what makes our state so great. Our history is rich and undeniable, and no one is seeking to erase that. However, I believe we must underscore diversity and undercut tributes that celebrate the Confederacy, which upheld the institution of slavery and perpetuated inequality and division in our country.
But Mary Barlow, also a native Floridian, doesn't feel that way. As a mother, she says she's strongly against Book's bill.
My family's been here 7 generations. We helped settle Putnam County. These men, these holidays, these are celebrations that I was raised up, on. These are men that my 3 boys, soon to be our 4 boys, they were raised up to honor. These are strong white role models that the South, we still deserve to have our heroes.
And Henry Russ, a Jacksonville resident, agrees.
This is nothing more than cultural genocide, what's going on here. And when you erase the minority, and the Southern white people are in the minority, and you take away our monuments and our heroes, that is cultural genocide, plain and simple.
As for Book, she says while she understands their passions, this is the right thing to do.
This is a very sensitive issue, and with respect to everybody here today, I do understand that, and don't do this lightly.
And the Senate Community Affairs Committee passed the measure on a 4-2 vote with 2 Republicans opposed. The measure now heads to a committee chaired by Ocala Republican Senator Dennis Baxley, a descendant of a Confederate soldier. His thoughts on the bill? Baxley calls the measure disheartening.
This bill does nothing to change anything or accomplish anything. It just simply insults these people about their ancestors. I wish this cultural purge would stop. I don't think it's healthy for us. It's creating division, and I think it's disrespectful to our ancestors. And whatever you think of their history, without them, we wouldn't even be here.
So having said that, is Baxley willing to hear the bill in his committee?
Well, I try to never presuppose these things, you know. I always try to listen to the sponsor, but my opinion of this approach of erasing our history and, you know, somehow disparaging and discrediting and others is not a productive thing. So we'll give it due consideration.
Meanwhile, a Tell's Companion bill has not yet had a hearing. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Cordner.
The Capitol Tiger Bay Club hosted controversial political consultant Roger Stone this week. In classic Stone fashion, the former lobbyist held nothing back and expressed his views on everything Trump and Russia-related, as Andrew Quintana reports.
Roger Stone spoke at a Capitol Tiger Bay Club event on Wednesday. Stone may be known as a former lobbyist for Donald Trump and as a political strategist for the Nixon, Reagan, and Bush campaigns, but what Roger Stone is famous for is his candor at each position. This has made him a controversial political consultant, something he did not hide on his visit to Tallahassee. He touched upon Hillary Clinton's loss in the 2016 election, but focused mainly on Donald Trump's presidency, which he admitted he did not expect.
I must tell you, though, that even I find his election victory improbable, in the sense that virtually everything that I'd learned in American politics over a 40-year career, all the rules, all of the standard things that we think, appeared to be out the window.
During his time as a lobbyist for Trump, Stone said he urged the celebrity real estate tycoon to run for office on three separate occasions, 1988, 2000, and 2012.
Here's a man who got nominated in the Republican primary and convention process without ever spending a nickel on a single poll. Here is someone who spent no money on focus groups, on analytics, on any instrument to tell him what to say in order to appeal to the American people.
Stone worked on Donald Trump's campaign back in 2015, but was eventually fired. Stone claimed he quit. However, that has not affected his support of the president. He charged the accusations of Russian collusion were a distraction made by Clinton's political consultant, John Podesta.
There is no evidence of Russian collusion, that being conspiracy, coordination, collusion with the Russian state to affect the outcome of the elections. But I have to give Mr. Podesta some credit for brilliance. No, what better way to distract from the fact that you and your brother got $38 million from oligarchs around Vladimir Putin and saying, oh, look over there at Donald Trump.
Transparency from both sides is what Stone said he ultimately wants.
Censorship is a bad idea. I don't care if you are the most liberal Democrat or most conservative Republican or a member of the Green, Libertarian, or Vegetarian Party. You should have the same rights as everyone else to be heard and to read and see what you want. Censorship is the greatest danger to our democracy, not Roger Stone speaking to the BBC.
While in Tallahassee, Stone said he will be meeting with House Speaker Richard Corcoran, but that it will be strictly personal. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Ange Quintana.
Bob Brooks from our sister operation, the Florida Channel, brings us up to speed on other happenings around the Capitol today.
Halfway through the 2018 Florida legislative session, today was Florida Dive-In Day and Florida Keys Day at the Capitol. It was also Florida Women's Day, and this is Jewish Heritage Week. It's also been a busy week in the legislature. Two of the bills that were passed out of House Health and Human Services today include House Bill 573, entitled Involuntary Examinations Under the Baker Act. This bill authorizes physician assistants and ARNPs to execute certificates under certain conditions, stating that they have examined a person and find that person appears to meet the criteria for involuntary examination. The bill has now been placed on the calendar for second reading in the House chamber. And House Bill 735, entitled Mammography. This bill, voted favorably with a committee substitute, specifies what information is included in the summary report provided to each patient. A similar Senate bill is now in Senate rules. House Bill 39, Weapons and Firearms. This bill reduces the penalty for a licensed concealed firearm owner whose firearm is briefly displayed to another person. It also outlines first and second offenses as non-criminal violations with fines up to $500, and third offense would be a second-degree misdemeanor. The bill passed the House Judiciary Committee by a vote of 14-6 and now heads to the full House. Thursday is both Broward and Florida A&M Day at the Capitol, and it's also CARD Day. Representatives from CARD, the Centers for Autism and Related Disorders, as well as from FAMU and from Broward County, will be on hand to provide information to legislators and to the public. And both the House and Senate are scheduled to be in session on the floor tomorrow afternoon. From the Florida Channel, I'm Bob Brooks for Florida Public Radio.
You're listening to Capitol Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally tonight, if you've heard it once, you've heard it far more than 1,000 times. Politics in America is divided beyond repair. Republicans and Democrats, whether in Congress, the Florida legislature, or the family dinner table, are at each other's throats. Literally. The hyperpartisanship, it's said, has put the combatants and the nation in peril. But then you talk to someone like Florida's former congressman from the 18th district. His name is Patrick Murphy, and he's a Democrat. And you ask him why he and his good pal, a former congressman from Florida's 13th district named David Jolly, ran for Congress in the first place.
First and foremost, you know, we care about our country. We care about solving problems. I don't think either one of us got into this with the intent that it was about our party. It was about our country and making a difference. However small that could be, we wanted to at least try to do something.
One of those things, says Murphy's buddy, Mr. Jolly, was that the two men spent a lot of time talking about things other than politics. Oh, and I did mention that Jolly is a Republican, right?
Getting to know each other, getting to know each other's families, and where you're from, and a little bit about each other helps you not be so antagonistic about someone's view, but maybe understand actually a little bit about where they're coming from.
Despite this friendly personal connection, Jolly says both he and Murphy quickly learned just how deep the political divide is.
I think Patrick and I had similar experiences in Congress. You know, we both came from very competitive districts. Myself, a Republican in a district President Obama had won twice. Patrick from a district where he unseated a Republican incumbent. And quickly in Washington, you realize just how divided the Congress is.
Part of the divide, thinks Murphy, is now baked into the system.
Let's look at the gerrymandering. The fact that 90% of congressional districts are basically predetermined is a big problem. It's incentivizing people to be more liberal or more conservative.
Not to mention, adds Murphy, the tsunami of attack ad cash pouring in unrestricted to the partisan super PACs. Also the ability of the electorate to isolate itself in partisan media bubbles. But both men also see hope. David Jolly, for one, applauds his home state of Florida's efforts to make voting districts more competitive, both through constitutional amendment and then affirmative court action. And he thinks there are more good things to come.
In fact, the Constitutional Review Commission has under consideration the possibility of a top two primary system. We are seeing those movements in states across the country. And the great news is the Supreme Court is largely affirming those moves, as long as they are voter-led and they don't infringe upon certain basic civil rights or heighten classes like race, gender, and so forth.
Now the two former congressmen, David Jolly and his buddy Patrick Murphy, are taking their plea for less division and more citizen involvement on the road.
What we're trying to do is get people to really understand what the core problem is instead of just complaining, oh, our government's so broken, these are the times of terrible people, and complaining about it, and say, hey, here's a few things that we think you can do by getting active, by getting involved in whether it's local, state, federal politics to make a difference, because we can change this.
Jolly and Murphy will bring their message to Florida's capital city next Tuesday evening during the meeting of the group called The Village Square. It sponsors regular community forums on often controversial topics, all in the hopes of promoting more civic engagement and civility. Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Sasha Cordner, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, and Kate Payne. We also thank Andrew Quintana and our sister operation, the Florida Channel. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at FPR Cap Report, and join us each weeknight at this time throughout the 2018 Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows, at wfsu.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following: a grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley, supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman, and Walker, a Florida law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman, and Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. And from Florida State University, a preeminent institution. FSU license plates support scholarships for deserving students who enrich and contribute to our community, the state, and nation. More at fsu.edu/mytag. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.